Africa is not a safe place to live comparatively. You've got 10 times as many road deaths per capita on the roads. You've got to be careful. It's one of the highest causes of death there. And it's funny coming back to UK and seeing a lot of people with white hair, because you don't see many people with white hair. You don't see a lot of older people in Africa, because the life expectancy is 30 years lower, or something of that range there. Uganda, there's a recent report out to say Uganda is one of the worst places, and this is the same statistics you get for all of Africa. One of the 50 worst countries in which to have children and to be a mother. 15,000 children die on the first day with causes that are treatable. So most of those causes are treatable, and so it doesn't need to be that way. It really doesn't. Maternal mortality is huge as well. And corruption is massive. I'm sure you hear a lot of stories about corruption. If you don't, in Uganda, the budget was slashed by 93%. Aid, the donor budget was slashed by 93% in this current year because of the corruption. DFID, the UK government, has stopped its aid going to Uganda, for example. And that's the story across a lot of Africa. In terms of the least developed countries, 33 of the 48, most of them are in Africa. And that's on one of the other slides. Sorry, this is the mortality rate. There's Uganda there. It's dropping, and that's one of the encouraging things. If you press the button again, you'll see where the UK is. The UK is right down, which is a little star which shows us where UK is, right there. So it's right down there, UK, comparatively. Then on the other slides, it just gives some of the... There's the GDP. You see how big Africa is, but then how small it is if you look at GDP per capita. Then the next slide again, there's the least developed countries in the world. And you see a lot of the reds there in Africa. And so, there's some, as I speak, if you just go to the next slide, I'd put lots of headlines coming up, which, as we were in Africa and I'm picking up the papers and reading them, these are some of the headlines you get for East Africa as well as Uganda, but there's a lot to do with corruption, a lot to do with slave and, this child sacrifice. It's not safe to be a mother in Uganda. Things like this you see, you know, and you hear about friends that die in childbirth and things, and it's quite, you know, discouraging. And, you know, what's the point of telling you all about this? What's the point of showing you this and reminding ourselves of what we know about a lot of what we hear of the picture in Africa? I think firstly, obviously, it's to be thankful for all the good things that we have in this country, the privileges that we get. And it's just to be thankful for that and to pray for people that aren't so privileged. That's obviously one thing. But I think the statistics illustrate another important thing, and the importance of a way of thinking or a worldview on life. A worldview is the way in which we interpret the world, the way in which we look at things. It's the glasses in which we interpret what we see around us. And in the West, we're taught a very scientific and rational explanation of how things work. And so if you think of somebody with depression, here we're taught that it's somebody that's got a chemical imbalance. In Africa, you think that's a spiritual thing. Somebody's been cursed, possibly. So you know, you don't think in the same, very different way of thinking. And a worldview that's held by a majority of people will determine the type of nations that are built. So if the culture is believing in a certain way of thinking, then that's the way you're going to build your communities, that's the way you're going to live as an individual. And if you think of somebody like Hitler, we know what his worldview was. He hated Jews so much, and he thought the Aryan race was so above other people and superior that he was willing to go to war and commit huge atrocities because of it. And so a worldview is extremely important. How you think about things, how we decide to live, how we decide to think, really influences how we decide to work it out. And if we look at Africa, if we look at Uganda, for example, we expect it to have a Christianized worldview, don't we? I mean, we know how many Christians, we're told, are there, how many people have become Christians, and so we expect it to maybe have a biblical worldview. That's the way I'd think, anyway, because people will have had their minds changed, and their attitudes and way of doing things changed to and that would influence the society. But there's a saying which says that the church in Africa is an inch deep and a mile wide. A mile wide, but an inch deep. So 80% of Ugandans would say they're Christians. And yet corruption is huge. It's rampant. It's all over the place. And it's including in the church. So Christians aren't, or those that consider themselves Christians, are still just as bad in terms of what they're doing. Tribalism is massive. I don't know if you know it, but 94% of people in Rwanda said they were Christians when the genocide was taking place. Can you believe it? I mean, I can't believe that when I hear about that. It's crazy. And that was a Christianized country, supposedly. In the area where we are, in the Church of Uganda, Arua district, they had to hold an early synod, an early meeting of all the leaders and important people, because they were trying to think about how to celebrate 100 years of the first missionaries coming in, but also because of huge issues of tribalism and adultery within the church. So if you look at this, there's a table I want to show you. It'll come up. So there's an African traditional mindset that I think is still there in a lot of ways. It's still part of people's thinking. It's not been transformed. And these attitudes stem from traditional animistic beliefs and behaviors. So here we have one that I've circled there. Maybe it's hard to see, but it says fatalism. So fatalism would tell you that if you've got a fatalistic attitude, you're not empowered. You're not feeling that you've got or that there's any way you can change the way you are. There's any way you can change what state you're in. So we're poor, and there's nothing we can do about it. You know, the gods or God is the one that determines it. There's nothing I can do to change what state I'm in. So if you say there's as I said, there's maybe a lot of accidents on the roads and people die on the roads. And if you've got a bus that's going along the roads, we hear these stories, and that the tires are balding, you know, that's the reason for the crash, because the tire blew out and then it rolled and a lot of people were killed. That's what happens. And if you've got a fatalistic attitude, you say, well, that's God's will. That's what happened. You know, you can't do anything about that. But actually, you could have done something about that, because you could change the tires. You could look and check to see, you know, that everything's in order. But that's not, you know, the way the thinking is at all. And so it really has a big effect on people. If tribalism, I've already mentioned, if my tribe is superior to your tribe, if you think that way, then how are you going to interact with other people from different tribes? You're going to hate them. And that's what we see. We see people hating other people. Even though they're supposedly Christians, they hate the other group of people. And so you see all these incredible interactions which are played out on our TV screens or in the culture. So Africa, what I feel and what we've been learning, learning as we've been back in Africa again, in Uganda this time, we've been really feeling that God's been teaching about mindset and the need for transformation of people's minds and attitude. And what I really feel, even though there's a lot of aid going into Africa, there's a lot of feeling that how do we change things? We think that Africa doesn't need more money and resources. You know, there's lots of examples of money going in, buildings being built, things, you know, with good reason, goodwill for people to do these things. But then these buildings, these other things going decrepit. We don't think that it's about money and resources. We think Africa needs a complete change of mindset and way of thinking, a change of a worldview to a biblical one, a change to a biblical way of thinking. And Romans 12, I've got that up there, it reminds us about that verse, which tells us that as Christians, we need to let our minds be transformed. Don't copy the behaviors and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. I think we can look at our own society here in Scotland, and we can, many attribute like the societal change here that we've seen to the Reformation and Enlightenment. And over time, I think our culture has changed as Christianity made an impact. And the influence of the Christian way of thinking made that impact. Here's a book that I found I've got. It's called The Victory of Reason: How Christianity Led to Freedom, Capitalism, and Western Success. Maybe not all of that's good, but it argues that the influence of Christian thinking has brought about a society which was able to prosper and develop and move forward. And we know about in Scotland, we had John Knox, for example. He taught that everyone was equal in God's sight. And because of that, from the richest to the poorest, everyone, and because of that, that spirit encouraged education to be freely available to everyone. And we pride ourselves in Scotland on free education for everyone, whatever strata of society we're from, and everyone could learn at that time. The School Act was passed, and that passed the law for the free education, and each parish had a school. So each parish had, whether each parish had a good school or not was a different story, but each parish, everybody was allowed to learn. And that meant that by the end of the 18th century, late 1700s, Scotland's literacy rate was the highest in the world. We had the highest rate of literacy in the world at that time. Higher than England's at that time, 53% in England for males and 70-something for Scotland. And it's still an educational system that we, the foundation of which we still have today. So we're still living on some of the attitudes and the ways of thinking which transformed us. In the 1800s, the church itself was the center of society, and it cared for the poor via the poor relief, and orphans and sick and other people were able to get help and get support. And today we still see organizations like Bethany Christian Trust. I used to work in that in Edinburgh, so I know that. I don't know about Glasgow's now, sorry. So maybe you can tell me about the ones that are here. Somebody was telling me about the Rainbow House and their work with the drug and alcohol addicts. So we still see these organizations that are making an impact with their Christian values to impact the world that we live in, the society that's really struggling under impact of addictions and other huge societal problems. And so it seems to me that the impacts and benefits we enjoy here we've not seen that, it's not reached Africa yet. We've not seen that reach Africa. It's also clear to me that many people are Christians in name, and when you hear about so many percentage of people being Christians in Africa, we need to sort of look at that and see, well, what evidence is there to see the change? Is there a change? And if there isn't, are people really living as though God exists? If He really is God, then He should be God over every aspect of life. It's no good turning up to church on a Sunday, putting on your Sunday clothes, and singing songs boisterously, like people are very good at singing song, and being very boisterous on Sunday, and then going out, and then living as though God wasn't important. I mean, we all should know that. I suppose that God should make a difference to all aspects of our life. In Colossians 3:17, it tells us that whatever we do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. And whatever we do, we're to be doing it with God, thinking about God, how we raise our families, how we do work, how we study. And instead of this separation of the holy and good, coming to church is good and it's great to pray and that's the holy part of life, but when you go out to work, God isn't interested in that. You can do what you want, sort of thing. And when we were in our church, that one of the clips was our church that we go to in Arua. The bishop was sharing, and they speak about these things, and everybody laughs because they know it's true. Because they say that people come to church on a Sunday morning, and then when problems come, they take a black chicken. I don't know why a black chicken, but they take a black chicken to the witch doctors, and then that's the one to solve their problems. So who's the one solving their problems? Is it God or is it this witch doctor person? There are 60 witch doctors. The Archbishop of Arua, he says he counted in Arua, our small town. It's not a big town. So is God relevant to people? Is God the complete answer? That's the questions we ask, and that's how we want to engage with people in Arua, in the northwest of Uganda, as well as around as much as possible with Africans. Is how important is God to you? And we want to see God's kingdom values apply to society, over the whole of society, to result in blessing and positive change. Because I believe that if we follow God's principles and values, we see a transformed society, and we're living in that in our society today. And my interest is community agriculture, or agriculture and community development. And I would like to encourage people in Arua to think about how belief in God should impact how they farm. And we're being told now about ecology and how we need to look after the environment. And I think that's right. I think those ecologists have it right, that we need to think about recycling. We need to think about how to look after our world. And I want to encourage people in Arua about how we can farm with a God's values in mind. And belief in God should impact the way that someone should look after their families. And then we'll talk a little bit about kids and how she wants to see that happen.
Yeah, great. So I don't know if you saw in the clip, but we spent our first 6 months in our time in Uganda on a YWAM base, mainly with Ugandans and South Sudanese and Congolese, different African nationalities. And it was an interesting time. It gave us a real insight into some of the cultural issues and some of the perspectives of people, and particularly regarding children and how they are perceived and treated. And the next slide, here we have the traditional Western family, and we were shown this by a Kenyan teacher, and it really struck me, and it helped me understand a lot of things that we see. So if you think in our culture we might have... this is looking at the hierarchy, how we regard husband and wife. We might have the husband here, and then the wife would be maybe considered equal. You might have a son, they might be just there, or you might even, and the daughter would be equal. They might be even considered equal with husband and wife, or even sometimes children might be idolized above the parents. Then our home, not so much land, but our home would be considered less important, if you think of it like a hierarchy like that. And then the Kenyan guy showed us with traditional African family that the husband is considered up here. The wife, or usually quite often wives, would be considered right down there. And then the son is considered there. Daughter would be under the son. And then land, which is... land is obviously a lot more important than for us, or the home and the cattle. That would be up there with the sun. So when you see that, David's been talking about worldview. It really helps understand if you're perceiving your wife or the wives in that way, then that will really impact how you will treat them and how they'll see themselves, and how if the children are seen in different levels as well. That will also impact how children are treated. I think the next slide is a picture, a cartoon. It's a kind of crude picture. It's something David took in a place working with ladies with HIV. And it's, I don't know if you can see it, but it's a lady that's depicted like an animal. And she's got a baby on her back. She's carrying firewood. She's carrying something else on her head. She's collecting water. She's carrying bananas, she's carrying lots of things, and then there's a man behind her beating her, saying, hurry, or haraka. So that's just, if wives are perceived in that way, then that's maybe, you do often see, even in our video, you see women doing a lot of the physical work, carrying things, walking, collecting, looking after the children. So my main interest, I think, and role in Uganda has been related to children, and through various things like a children's literacy program and developing Sunday school teacher training. Uganda is one of the youngest countries in the world, and what we mean by that is it's over 50% of the population are under 15, which is really crazy when you think, when you start thinking about how that will pan out in a few years' time and how that, what that looks like with people's, the workforce. It's got enormous implications for Uganda. So the next slide is, we've been living in the West Nile. I think you saw the map right at the top on the west. And the tribe are mainly the Lugbara tribe. There are other tribes as well, but we've been learning about the tribe and the culture over the last 6 months or so. And there are various things which we've learnt. The average person will have about 6 children that live, so there'll be probably a couple of extra children that unfortunately die. Children are seen positively. They're seen as a sign of blessing from God or the gods. But that's got also some reasons why, because they are very helpful. They're a free workforce with all the physical labour that needs to be done and the extra childcare. Children are seen as a sign of blessing. The word for daughter in Lugbara is Zamva, which is literally translated meat child. And the dowry system is still going strong. So children, the girls fetch a good amount of cows for when they're married. So children, the girls are valued in that respect, in that they'll bring in the money for the family, but they're still seen differently to boys. In Uganda, and I'm sure other countries in Africa as well, there's a very strong boarding school culture or expectation. So when children get to secondary school, they go off to a boarding school several hours, maybe 8 hours away. And that's where they're pretty much brought up. So then the parents are working hard to try and pay those school fees, but the teachers are then responsible for bringing up the children or training them. There's a phrase we've heard lots of times: the African ears are in the buttocks. And that's really referring to how much physical abuse there can be. Because if discipline, the main way to discipline people is to beat their bottom, then that's the way that people are seen as getting their message across. So both parents are often out for long hours. Life is difficult there. There's no doubt about it. They're working, selling things, farming, digging, and the children are often left unsupervised for long amounts of time and basically left unparented. And if we believe David's been talking about the biblical worldview, if we believe that the biblical worldview towards children is that as an adult responsibility, we need to train a child in the way they should go, which is what it says in Proverbs, then it seems a huge area of need to work with the parents or Sunday school teachers or the teachers to help these people to guide and discipline this massive growing population of Uganda, who will be the ones that are going to shape the country in a few years' time. I've been working with several pastors there at the bottom there. You can't really see them. But they already see some their worldview. They already see the value in children and their potential. And it encourages me that by seeing how they are already investing their time and energy in children in their church, that change is possible. That David's painted quite a bleak picture about worldview, but it shows that if people's worldview changes to become to see a biblical perspective, that children are valuable and have potential, then there is hope and change is possible. And even if it's just these two pastors in their churches developing their Sunday school program and pushing for resources coming from their own people, so that the children can be equipped to learn a little bit more about the Bible and learn some life skills, then it's a tiny step towards bringing God's kingdom here on earth. There's a book by Tom Wright, who's the former Bishop of Durham. It's called Surprised by Hope, and he talks about how every time an act of love or every time a deed is done in Christ, every time justice is done, every time peace is made, temptation is resisted, these very earthly, simple events make real and tangible the meaning of Jesus' resurrection. They act as signposts of hope, pointing to God's kingdom on earth. And so when you see someone that's grasped something of a biblical worldview, you can see that little step towards bringing something of God's kingdom here on earth.
Okay, great, thanks. I just want to finish off just by, I don't know, when we're sharing, I don't know what you think about our life and our country thousands of miles away can, what difference does it make to any of us sitting here just now? And I think that maybe the idea of the importance of worldview is shown. And I think each of us has a role to play in terms of influencing the worldview of the people in the society we're in now. We see the changes of society, and we get despairing about it. And we see the values being eroded that used to, you know, underpin our society. Our society now today more than ever needs dedicated Christians that are willing to be salt and light in a world which that doesn't know the answers. It doesn't have direction. And wherever we are, we can make an impact, whether we're in work or our education, whether we're studying, in our families. We all have a role to play. We each are unique individuals. God has given us gifts and skills that some people think they don't have anything in any way of getting involved, but we all do. We all have somewhere and some way we can do that. People call us missionaries because we're on support and we're all the way in Africa. But I read somewhere else that missionaries are like tour guides. They help people find the creative, life-giving God already present in their midst. So all of us can be missionaries, and all of us are missionaries if we're Christians. It's about helping people to find God they're yearning for in all aspects of the culture, wherever you're placed. So I want to ask each of us here if we have a vision for Scotland? Do we have a vision for our communities or societies or families? And I think we as a church need to be at the forefront of bringing that vision for our nation. And Martin Luther King, 50 years ago this year in August, he had that "I Have a Dream" speech, 1963. I just looked it up on the net yesterday, so I know. Yeah, but he had a dream about what he wanted to bring. He wanted to bring transformation to his society, and wanted to bring black people and white people together, to be working together, to be living together. And that was inspired by his Christian values, his God, his kingdom values that he was bringing to society. And he made a huge difference through his speeches, and yet he paid the price for that. Do we have a godly inspired passion to see change and transformation in our communities and our nation and societies? As I've heard say, why blame the dark for being dark? We can't sort of like get all worried sometimes about all that we see around us. We can't blame people for their behavior when they don't know any better. It's far more helpful to ask why the light isn't as bright as it could be. And we all can make a difference. We can have an impact. We're trying to make a difference with God's help in this area of Africa. And hopefully God working through each of us can change the world. We want to see the change in the tribalistic attitudes and the corruption that we notice in Arua and Uganda. I'll leave with, just finish with this quote. It's our turn to rediscover the beautiful, dangerous, and compelling idea that a group of people surrendered to God and to each other really can change the world. We really can change the world. I think we're going to sing a song just now. Is that right? Which one? Sorry. It's up there. There you go. Thanks for listening.